What's up, everybody? I'm Maddie, and I am so caffeinated because pumpkin spice lattes dropped again this fall.
And I'm Reebs, and I am zero caffeinated today, actually. I've been trying to not drink coffee as much, so this is Uncaffeinated Reebs.
And we are the Oh God Podcast.
We are a podcast, a faith podcast that seeks to create space for people to ask questions, to deconstruct harmful theologies and faith, and to just kind of talk about the things that are usually like a little taboo in church spaces. So yeah, this is just a place where people can come together, and we are an inclusive community, and yeah.
So welcome, friends, to a faith community that redefines faith in a world that isn't as black and white as the church may make it seem.
Woo.
Oh, I had a whole thought.
Wait. I have no thoughts forever. Let me. It's
not on Do Not Disturb. There we go. Well, Reeves, luckily for you, or maybe luckily for me, or maybe luckily for none of us, I think I've picked up your caffeine intake since you stopped drinking coffee. I think my coffee intake has increased. So I'm keeping the scales balanced for the both of us.
Nice. I'm so happy for you. No, I will go through seasons where I will drink like multiple cups a day, and then seasons where I'll just kind of like stop cold turkey. Because I had a friend in college that said it only takes like 3 days to get over a caffeine addiction. And so sometimes I'm like, you know what? Let's just see if we can do it. And yeah.
I'm proud of you for giving it that effort.
I'm so tired. I probably just need to go back to caffeine, but yeah.
Yeah.
Give it a good old college try.
I feel like it's been hard too, because it's so hot outside.
Yeah.
But like you want it to be fall. And so at least for me, I'm like drinking more caffeine than I usually would because I just want the taste of fall.
Yeah. I actually really hate pumpkin flavored things.
I don't like pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
But I like all other pumpkin baked goods.
I like pumpkin bread. That's it. Ooh, yeah. I don't love pumpkin lattes. I've got to be honest, Maddie. I really don't. I don't.
This might be the end of the show.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
And we will never be heard from again.
That's where I draw the line.
This is the penultimate argument. We can never recover.
This is inexcusable.
But okay. So I will say though, I do currently have a pumpkin patch in my backyard. So it's not that I dislike pumpkins. I don't know. I just don't like it. I don't like it in drink flavor.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Did you see the thing on TikTok with the guy who grows pumpkins, but he puts his pumpkins in Frankenstein molds? And so when they grow into the face of Frankenstein, and he sells Frankenstein-faced pumpkins.
That's hilarious. I was like,
this is the coolest thing.
Man, maybe Austin and I need to get on that.
You need some pumpkin molds. You can get a mold of my face.
Yeah. Maddie-shaped pumpkins. I try selling them on the street. I'm like, but they're Maddie-shaped pumpkins. And people are like, who's Maddie?
She doesn't even go here.
That's so funny. I love that.
Yeah. I was like, that is the ultimate.
Yes.
The ultimate Halloween thing.
I do like, I like spooky season. So I'm excited for that. But also I don't like the cold weather of fall. I'm kind of anti-fall, if we're going to be honest.
Reads.
I love summer. And so fall is the end of summer, which is like a grieving. I am mourning. In fall.
I live for, fall is my favorite season.
No, it's most people's.
It's not too hot and it's not too cold.
All you need is a light jacket.
And I can wear all my favorite sweaters and boots, but I don't have to worry about it being so icy that I cannot leave my house. Winter is my least favorite season.
Yeah.
I feel the same about spring though. I like the transitional seasons because I feel like they're the perfect temperature.
I don't like fall. Winter, I'm a shell of a human being. And then spring is great because I'm like, wow, new life and things are getting warmer. So I like spring and I like summer. I'd say at least if I had spring to put it up to it, I dislike winter the most because, and that bleeds into my feelings about fall. Because I hate winter so much, I'm like, no, fall means winter is coming. And that's where I draw the line.
All right, Jon Snow, relax yourself.
Yeah. Anyways, my hot topic feelings about the fall.
Well, I feel personally victimized.
The colors
attacked
are beautiful. I love the leaves. I love a good like.
You're even in the perfect space.
Yeah.
Where I'm your like house surrounded is to by have, like beautiful State Park fall.
Yeah. Yeah. Did I have fall here? Yeah. I guess I lived here last year. We were still inside a lot.
Yeah. You were locked in. Mm-hmm. You couldn't see.
So what is it about fall that you love the most?
I think it's the...
After I poop on it for like three whole minutes.
I know you think it's the worst. I think I love the... there's just something about the energy in fall. Maybe it's because everything's dying. I don't know. But it... But it like
death is in the air.
It smells. There's like a fall smell.
Yeah, like the crispy leaf smell.
Yeah, it's the crispy leaves. It's the color. It's the little chill that's in the air, but it's not too cold. I personally think that I am my most fashionable in the fall.
Yeah,
because I don't have to cover everything with a coat.
Yeah,
listen, don't you even put that on me.
I wear Christian girl fall colors, so I can't say anything.
I like the colors.
I had someone else tell me that I dress Christian girl fall, and
oh,
I was like,
no, we're gonna have to that
the color palette. That is my ideal color palette. I do love the, like, I love a good neutral, like muted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very good.
I love the color palette, but I finally got rid of, I did used to own one of those big plaid blanket scarves. Uh-huh. And then I realized like what stereotype that got associated with. And I was like, I guess I can't wear this anymore. So I donated it because I couldn't wear it without making fun of myself. And I was like, that's, we can't do this every time I leave the house. But yeah, I think it is like, I feel like I can be the most creative with what I wear. I just really like the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
well,
I like Halloween.
For you. Yeah.
So thank you.
I'll pass my seasonal baton of joy on to you.
Thank you.
From summer and to fall. We'll have to find someone who likes winter.
Katia loves winter.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Actually, my friend Emma loves winter.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Shout out to our winter friends.
Yeah. Woohoo. Emma and Katia. Good job.
Way to carry the
team.
I'm
so happy for you. I wish I loved it. I just don't.
Well, luckily for everyone, this is my favorite beginning of my favorite season, which means that because the pumpkin spice latte is out, that is how I mark my calendar year. Christmas also starts when the peppermint mocha comes out at Starbucks tells me what time of year it is.
Yeah.
So because this pumpkin spice latte is out, it means it's fall, which means it's spooky season.
Yes.
Which means it is entirely normal for us to talk about monsters in the Bible today.
Yes. Oh, good. What a segue, Maddie. Was like, I totally forgot what we were talking about today. And I was like, where are we going with this? I'm like, oh yeah, we're talking about monsters. Like, my mind could not be more blank today.
I put a lot of effort into that transition.
It was good. It was flawless. 10 out of 10. You got me. So.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
That makes for one person. But I'm really excited about this. I feel like the last couple of episodes we've talked about like bigger things, which is
heavier.
Great.
Yeah, which is good. It's good. It's good. It's important.
Yeah, it's good and it's important. Absolutely. But I think there also is like stuff we don't talk about.
Yeah,
that's just weird.
Fun. Yeah,
you know. So I pulled together a list and some information on like monsters and creatures in scripture. This is by no means extensive. There's a ton of other weird things we don't talk about. Like, there's apparently a basilisk.
Oh, okay.
I know. That comes up. I think it was like in Revelation or something.
Okay. Yeah, Revelation has a lot of weird ones.
Yeah, but it's like a basilisk that also looks like a rooster.
Fascinating.
Listen, the creativity of the overlapping of creatures.
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been reading a lot of high fantasy. You know that. Yes. And some of this stuff fits right in. It's like, this is weird.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I feel like a lot of my biblical monster knowledge actually probably comes from Supernatural, which is like probably not the best resource.
I love it.
And, but they do talk a lot about like angels and stuff in there and like angels, and they do have like Leviathans and all that stuff. So I'm very excited for this because I feel like growing up, like you'll hear like, oh yeah, there's like half angel, like half human. Or Austin always loves to throw out the fun fact that there's a unicorn in the Old Testament.
That
or just like things like that. Oh, am I foreshadowing?
Little teaser, little taster.
Yeah. Well, he'll be happy. I'll have to make him listen to this one. shout out. So yeah, I'm pumped. You did a lot of the research for this one, which I'm excited to learn the knowledge.
Yes. Ooh. So take a moment, get your favorite spooky sweatshirt on, maybe a nice cup of tea, if you're like me, something caffeinated, and then curl up in your spot and let's talk about monsters. Spiders.
Ooh. Okay. A spooky.
So the first two that we're going to talk about are somewhat linked together. So you have the behemoth and the leviathan in the Old Testament.
I've never heard of the behemoth.
Yeah. The first time I heard of a behemoth was when it was used to just talk about like a really big thing.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I didn't know that was like, I knew it was a word. I didn't know it was like a reference to a biblical like creature.
Yeah. I didn't either. And then I didn't know that it was connected to the Leviathan. So
yeah, all new.
A whole journey. for us.
360.
So you meet the behemoth first in the book of Job in chapter 40. And it comes up in one of God's like long speeches. So in the book of Job, there are a couple of spots where God goes off on these like monologue tangents.
I kind of love God's tangents in the book of Job.
They it's really totally like sassy and very like, who are you? Did you tell me that the ram was made in the
I don't know, just like all this stuff. It's really good.
And that's totally what this is. And so in the scripture, this is like, I'm going to kind of hop around because it's a really long description, but some of the stuff is crazy. So God's like, look at the behemoth, which I made just as I made you. It eats grass like an ox. Its power is in the muscles of its belly. It has a stiff tail like cedar. Bones are tubes of bronze and limbs like bars of iron. It's one of the first great acts of God. So only its maker can approach it with the sword. It eats food from the mountains. And it's covered by lotus trees for shade. It drinks from the Jordan River. Can one take it with hooks or pierce its nose with a snare? The answer is no to that. So the idea is that there's this like giant beast, one of the first creatures that God created that lives on land and that only God can tame.
That like truly does sound like it came out of like a fantasy book. Like after reading like ACOTAR and learning about like some of the characters or like the older, like, I don't know, they weren't like gods, but like just like kind of the older, more powerful creatures and how they would talk about it. I'm like, this isn't a fantasy novel.
Yeah. This is like Bible. Totally a thing that is. Where are the fae? This is another sidebar tangent. I had to start reading for school again and realize that I've been reading so much like Sarah J. Maas and like all this stuff over the summer. Trying to read a scholarly article makes me want to cry. This was such a beautiful like break for me. Because I was like, at least there are still fun stories in this. Because, oh my goodness. I was like, these are two very different types of reading.
It really is.
So this was nice. So then after that, in Job 41... but also in the Psalms, in Isaiah, in Amos, and in the book of Enoch, which is an uncanonized book in the Apocrypha, we meet the Leviathan. And this is how God describes the Leviathan, again, hopping around because it's very long. Can you draw Leviathan with a fish hook or press down its tongue with a cord? The answer is no.
Classic God.
Will it speak soft words to you? Will it make a covenant with you? Will you play with it as with a bird? Or will you put it on a leash for your girls?
For your
which was
girls?
Weird.
What? I don't like when you put it on a leash for your girls.
Could you imagine you like walk in and you have a goldfish just like on a
on
leash?
A leash. And you're like, for the girls. Oh, this is for the girls.
This is for the girls.
Just my Leviathan.
This one's for the girls. A little Martina McBride. So can you fill its skin with harpoons or its head with fishing spears? Lay hands on it. Think of the battle. You will not do it again. So you, any hope of capturing it will be disappointed. You can't capture it. We're not even the gods overwhelmed at the sight of it. Who can open the doors of its face? There is terror all around its teeth. Its back is made of shields in rows, closely shut up with a seal. No air can come between them. They are joined to one another. They clasp each other and cannot be separated. This is fun. It sneezes, flash forth light.
Honestly, I feel like that's what happens with my sneezes. They're very forceful.
Lightning.
Yeah.
From its mouth go flaming torches. Sounds like a dragon, right?
Yeah. So
this is also one of
and
the
like
things
kind of
where
a
they
sea
get
creature almost. Yeah. Beginning imagery. Interesting.
Yeah. Nostrils come out smoke. I mean, this thing is just nuts, right? It counts iron as straw and bronze as rotten wood. An arrow cannot make it flee. On earth, it has no equal, a creature without fear. It is king over all that are proud. So like both of these creatures in some veins of theology are considered the original kind of creation or forms of the chaos monster created at the beginning of time. Sometimes they're seen as a pair, one in the water and one on land, and sometimes not. Now I'm not as well versed in this, but there is an entire kind of understanding within the creation story specifically around this idea of the world before God created being pure chaos and God creating order out of the chaos.
Yeah.
And so because of that, there existing this balance of things. And so these monsters kind of being part of that balance to the chaos of the world and everything being ordered in its place, but having like this scale of things.
I mean, to me, that sounds very like just old mythology, you know, like just mythology really, or like Greek mythology. That's what it makes it. Cause isn't there like a chaos thing in Greek mythology?
I'm sure. Okay. Especially when you think about the, like the origins of the creation story being directly tied to Babylon.
Having like
and,
so many, what's the word, like overlaps with all those different like creation stories in that same area or region. It's interesting.
Yeah. So in both cases, these creatures are so powerful that only God can control it. But for the Leviathan specifically, some people interpret it as a reflection of a creature called Lotan, which was a a primeval monster that was defeated by the god Baal Hadad. It also, again, like we talked about, parallels this imagery for the monster within Mesopotamian kind of mythology that was defeated by Marduk, which is the Babylonian god that the first part of Genesis points back to.
Fun.
So if you want to hear more on that, listen to our episode on the creation story.
Yeah.
Because we talk about that more extensively, but this good creature is often compared or like reflected back to that story.
Did we, so I know that episode, was that one of our, just so people can find it, was that one of our like ecology episodes? Was
I think
that was the In the Beginning God Recycled, like the first of our two environmental ones, maybe, because I think we kind of did the creation story and all of that. So if you're trying to find that one, start there. I think that's the episode it was in.
Yeah. And if it's not that one, we definitely reference it in like, I think all of the creation ones. So anything that sounds like it's going to point towards creation, it should be
towards
in there
like
a little
the world.
Bit.
Go listen to it.
So when we look at the book of Isaiah, the Leviathan is used as a metaphor often for like a powerful Emily.
The most powerful Emily in the world.
Enemy. Emily's, if you're listening, we love you.
You're so powerful.
I apologize that I can't speak. We love the Emilies here. I do not want to equate you to a sea monster or to the powerful enemy of Babylon. You are beautiful and you exist all on your own.
Oh, man. Oof. That was good.
So anyway, Leviathans are now a descriptor for any kind of sea monster. Yeah. And a behemoth is a descriptor for any kind of big, powerful entity.
Okay. Or Emily.
For Emily, if your name is Emily.
That's interesting. I, for some reason in my mind, I always thought that Leviathans were the things that were like half angel, half human, where like the god things came down and like mated with the humans and like had
that
children.
That is a different monster we will talk
about.
Okay,
so that's not, okay. No. So supernatural got that one wrong. Supernatural, I'm coming for you.
I also, I mean, first off, yeah.
Yeah, CW, what were you thinking?
Also, I think with some of these two, like the imagery and the things overlap so much and there's like different understandings of these words that it's also possible that is like one of the ways that a certain culture who use the same word identify.
Like maybe different people see it differently.
Because some of it was like kind of confusing to wade through, let alone the description of the things, just like what they are. So for example, behemoth, the Hebrew word that's used for that, is one that it has a root in this understanding of the word beast. But some people also think that it might originate from an Egyptian word that talks about the water ox, or basically like a hippopotamus.
Oh, fun.
And so maybe it's a hippo, but that's like not confirmed. So then you see more of the creature in the Jewish Apocrypha, specifically in the Book of Enoch, in the second book of Esdras. And in Enoch, the behemoth is this male monster of the land, with the female counterpart being the Leviathan in the sea.
Okay.
And then there's a sky monster.
Ooh,
that
fun.
Is called, I think it's Z's. Don't know how they fit in.
They're just vibing.
They're just there.
In
and
the
then
sky.
In Esdras, the two monsters were inhabiting the land and the sea after they were separated, because they both were in the ocean and the ocean wasn't big enough. The ocean's both, not big, big enough for the two of us. And so one
I
of
really
them had
wish
to go
I
on
see
land.
That, like, showdown.
I just
oh,
really
so
want
funny.
A shirt
that
with like,
petty,
like the little cowboy hat, and it's like a hippo and a fish, and they've just got like,
a hippo and fish.
Exclusive merch, anyone?
Oh, man. The ocean's not big enough for the two of us.
Get to the land.
Somehow we got to get Emily in there.
Emily.
On that shirt. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That little laugh.
So in all of this, in Revelation, what we see is that both of these creatures will supposedly serve as food for the elect after Christ's return.
Oh.
So they come back around.
Tasty.
And there was something in a Jewish rabbinic legend that talks a bit about the great battle at the end of days. And so mm-hmm. it's supposedly they are fighting and God will approach them and defeat them. And then God will use the creatures to shelter and feed the righteous with joy and merriment is like the idea. There's also this fun little lore that I found from an article that I read on the Jewish text of the Haggadah, that the behemoth reaches its peak strength on the summer solstice of
Same.
Every year.
Me too.
Just raging. Oh, it gets better. So then the behemoth lets out its most ferocious roar. And its roar is so powerful that it leaves all of the other animals afraid, making them less ferocious for the rest of the year.
I love that energy.
And so it's an act of divine mercy, because without this, the animals would grow more wild and would be more prone to attack each other and humans. So it yells
yeah.
really loud and everybody
and
stays in line.
Yeah. I love that imagery. That is so funny.
I also love that it's like related to the solstice, which also then plays into like seasonal astrology and like energetic
things. Which is
really
fascinating. Yeah, because there are so many like things that fall on the solstice. Fascinating.
Yeah.
I love that. I was also just picturing like Gecko as like the little behemoth like making his biggest ow. Because he is a noisy boy.
Oh, I love that.
I kind of want him to do it, but he doesn't do it on command. I've tried.
He's over here passed out at my feet. So
yeah, he'll probably start snoring soon.
I love it. Now, Leviathan are fun, again, because they give us dragon imagery. So it's kind of assumed that's how we got some dragon
sea one,
stuff.
Right?
Yes.
And it also has fire.
Yes.
Okay.
But also because it has fire in Christianity, you can see them used as an image, like Satan imagery, Leviathan.
Okay.
But then it becomes like this very confusing conversation of like, what the heck is Satan even supposed to look like?
Well, yeah.
Like, is Satan a sea dragon, or is it the red dude with the horns, or is it this like energetic force in the world, or is it like a Lucifer that's like super hot? Like, what is, what are we working with here?
Yeah, I do think all of the like imagery and mythology around like Satan is very fascinating. Mm-hmm. I know very little about it outside of the fact that like, I think, and this could be so wrong, I could be just really uneducated in this, but I feel like I've been told before that a lot of that imagery, one, very little of it comes from the Bible, but two, that some of it is potentially in like texts in the Apocrypha or just like Catholic mythology, essentially, like they kind of just, I don't know, in the Dark Ages, like came up with all this mythology and then like we still have it today, but it's like not in the Bible. So that's where I'm always confused of like, where do we get all this Satan mythology? So
yeah, I don't know the answer to that either, but I've heard something similar.
Yeah.
And it's like rooted in like creative, almost like a like fan art.
Yeah.
So like a lot of the art that's created like in the medieval kind of realm. I'm not.
Yeah, because I feel like I've heard maybe the whole Lucifer story comes from the Apocrypha, or maybe from a book that just wasn't canonized.
I think.
So yeah. Anyways, if people out there know, please tell me.
Know.
I'd love to know.
Yeah. Because it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And so there's our boy, you know, Thomas Aquinas, described them
love
as
him and hate him.
The just demon good. Of envy. So also then Leviathan became associated mm-hmm. with the seven deadly sins. So Thomas Aquinas saw the Leviathan as the demon of envy. There was a German bishop and theologian, Peter Binsfeld, who saw them as one of the seven princes of hell in alignment with the seven deadly sins. So then you go from sea monster to like hell prince.
Yeah.
Again,
sounds
how
like my
they,
middle
we got
school
there.
Experience. Going from sea monster to hell prince.
Oh, you know, puberty.
Got it. Yeah, and Thomas Aquinas, I think he was the one that also was like very anti, like we also talked about him when we talked about environmentalism, because he was the one that was very much like, we can subdue the earth and we should, and like we should take the earth for all it's worth and animals have no souls. Like he was very like against. So I do think that's pretty on brand that he would also be like, yeah, and Leviathans are like demons. So
yeah. Yeah. Heaven forbid.
Boo.
Yeah. Thomas.
Come on.
Thomas and Emily, you're killing us here. Genuine apology to all Emily's.
Emily's, we would like to take a moment.
We love you very much.
We respect you.
So those are the behemoth and the Leviathan, mm-hmm. the monsters of the land and sea. Mm-hmm. Then we have my personal favorite because I'm the most interested in this, possibly because of all the books I read as a child, which are the Nephilim. Am I saying that right? Nephilim? Nephilim.
Yes. Okay, wait. These are
Nephilim.
I think this is what I was thinking.
I don't know how to say it.
Nephilim. Let's just, the rest of the podcast is you trying to say
it. To say the word, probably.
Just over and over.
It's in here a lot, so it's likely.
I think this is what I was thinking of with like the angels and the human.
Yes.
The little hybrid. Okay, yes. This is, I just got my words off.
I'm excited. So
interesting. Because I don't know very much outside of, again, Supernatural. And we don't know how much is accurate, so.
Yeah. Please. So, again, this is a very, well, if you know more, let us know. Very small summary.
Yes.
But, so we find them in Genesis 6. Verse 4, and it says the Nephilim were on earth in those days and also afterward when the sons of God, that phrase is important, went to the daughters of humans, also important, who bore children to them. They were the heroes that were of old, warriors of renown. Mm-hmm. So then we get to Numbers 13, 32 through 33, where we also see them again, and it says, so they brought to the Israelites an unfavorable report of the land that they had spied out, saying, the land that we've gone through as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are of great size. Mm-hmm. There we saw the Nephilim, aka the Anakites, from the Nephilim, and to ourselves we seemed like grasshoppers, and so we seemed to them. So the idea in both of these is that you have this group of really, really massive, large beings with strength that lived before and after the flood.
Fascinating.
So you have like this whole spectrum of belief around who these like people were, because they existed in the story both before and after the flood.
Yeah, because I feel like I definitely have heard before that a lot of people think that Goliath was like potentially Nephilim because like he's supposed to be like what, 9 feet tall or something insane. Yeah. So yeah, just crazy.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy tall people. So
and this is one that I think is interesting because this is like, we learn this David, the, oh my gosh, the story of David and Goliath. And we're taught like, yeah, Goliath was huge. And we just believe that. But then when you really think about the fact that we're thinking of like, literally this like God human hybrid, like I feel like if a lot of people broke that down to the mythology, they'd be like, what? No.
And you took him down with a rock?
Yeah. So I just think that's interesting because that is one that I feel like we all just kind of believe because we're taught that one a lot. So I love some mythology and just like stuff that like we'll never know the answer to that, but it's so cool. Okay, continue.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. So the Hebrew word Nephilim can be translated as giants or taken to mean the fallen ones because the word Nephal means to fall that it's like rooted with. And it's debated back and forth if we're talking about really like giants or if we're talking about like fallen ones and then what fallen ones means. So on some people think that these are fallen angels that reproduced with human women. And this also comes from the first book of Enoch in the Apocrypha. So a lot of this comes from Enoch.
Nice. I might have to read that.
Now it also says there that they're giants, which is described in Numbers. And it suggests that because this comes before the flood story, that the flood was intended to wipe out this line, but not humanity as a whole. Mm-hmm. So those that God wished to get rid of wasn't the creation of humans, but it was this hybrid creation that existed outside of the initial intention.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Now, what does come up, and I thought of this a lot when I was reading this, is this fun kind of theological point of like, if angels and demons are like purely spiritual beings, similar to like, how do we contextually visualize Satan even in the Leviathan conversation? So if they're purely spiritual beings, how can they reproduce with humans?
Yeah.
And if they're not, then what does that mean for us and our understanding or relationship to this other form of creation?
Yeah. If there's these other like physical beings out there that aren't like quite human. And then we really are in our own like fantasy novel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay.
That's insane.
Yeah. So this kind of space, and this is where I will shamelessly plug the show Lucifer on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. I still haven't watched it. I need to. I've been told it's incredible.
It's
mostly
like
by you, I think.
Generally good. I just really like it.
And I've heard that it's great. So
it's got like some interesting points that come up, especially later in the seasons. But this being one of them that I came back to, which is that like in that show, the angels are like tangible beings, which means that they can exist. And so you get all these fun, like spinoff points and things to consider. But, so, you know, perhaps they were quote unquote fallen angels who made the decision to come and to reproduce. The less supernatural idea is that they were just human men who fell away from righteousness. And so that phrase sons of God is potentially considered a reference to the descendants of Seth, Adam's son, and they're members who rejected God. And so this is called the Sethian view. It's something that Augustine held. John Calvin has been noted as touching on it a couple of times. Other church leaders have held this view. And it's rumored that these like fallen men, right, who walked away from God, reproduced with the daughters of men who were unrighteous descendants of Cain, resulting in the Nephilim, or those who didn't believe in God. So,
okay. So it's not so much a creature thing. It's more of like a belief in God thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or good versus evil type thing.
And so people who believe this try to support it with Matthew 24:38. So when Jesus talks about the days before the flood and humans were marrying and giving in marriage and whatever, this is how they kind of try to say that it's just people who walked away.
I prefer the monster view.
I think the monster view is more fun.
More fun.
But you have all these other things. Then you also have the interpretation of it as giants. And so that's based off of a Greek interpretation of a Latin word. Mm-hmm. And some people see these separately. So some people think there are just giants and Nephilim. So there's fallen people and a really tall human. Mm-hmm. And they just both exist.
Okay.
So
yeah,
it could be that. There's also touch of this in the Quran. Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, that is.
So in the Quran, I found a article that talked about a prophet that declares to be like this group of people, which is guessed to reference the Nephilim. It points to the people of Ad, which are said to be giants. But in the Islamic legend, it doesn't say that they were taken out by the flood because they were too tall. They stood above the water.
Yeah.
So God just destroyed them.
Interesting. Okay, that's fun. He's like, sorry, you're a little too tall. We're just going to get you out of here. That's unfortunate.
So, yeah. So then scripturally and in literature, especially in Enoch, there's a lot of stuff there for the interpretation of fallen angel.
Okay.
So this is where I personally want to be.
Yeah.
Is in the fallen. I just think it's more fun.
Yeah.
But
same. I mean, I will believe in anything. I am ripe for believing any conspiracy theory, like paranormal stuff. So like, yes, I will fully believe.
What's that scene in New Girl where Nick looks at Jess? He's like, you believe anything? And she's like, no, I don't. And he's like, my name's Jamal. And she's like, what?
Yeah, no, I really do feel like that's me. I will believe anything anyone tells me if they say it with enough confidence. I'm the perfect like target for any car salesman. I would buy anything. Okay.
So noted, if you're trying to sell something, just go ahead and call Reeves.
Yeah. I will have to call anyone else in my life with more sense. Probably that's, I think, why I gravitate towards eights genuinely is like Enneagram eights. Like I do better around other people who are like more assertive and can say no. Anyway.
Well, I'm happy to help.
Yeah, thank you.
Let me know if someone's trying to sell you a call.
Or yeah, I have like a list of people that I'm like, no, we need to run this by someone.
I love that for you. Mm-hmm. So in the scriptural backing for Nephilim being fallen angels, mm-hmm. the Hebrew phrase for the sons of God is used twice outside of Genesis 6, in Job 1 verse 6 and 2 verse 1. And both of those verses explicitly reference angels.
Ooh, okay.
Enoch also breaks the story out more. So there's a Greek and Aramaic and other translations of manuscripts of this book that are held in the British Museum and at the Vatican. And in them, the Nephilim are connected to a group called a word that means the watchers. And in that story, it's said that Semiza, I'm going to say that wrong, mm-hmm. but is an angel of high rank that leads a rebel sect of angels to the earth to sleep with human women.
I'd read that book. It sounds so interesting. Yeah.
And so like summarizing the like passage that it has here, it talks about how the children of men had multiplied and had really beautiful daughters. And the angels, the children of heaven, saw and lusted after them and said to each other, like, yo, let's go down and choose wives from the children of men and have children with them. And Semiza, who was their leader, said, I fear that you'll not actually do this, and I'll go down by myself and I'll have to pay the price myself. And so they all go back and they say, you know what, let us all swear an oath, we're gonna bind ourselves mutually to the implications of this plan. Like, if it goes wrong, we're all going down with it. And they swore this and bound themselves to one another. And
no, it really was like a blood oath.
Yeah. And then 200 of them descended onto Mount Hermon. And they called it Mount Hermon because they had sworn and bound themselves by mutual imprecations upon it. So they literally...
Fascinating.
Yeah, they're like, yo, they're pretty hot. 200 of us want to go have human wives. And the guy was like, if I go by myself, I'm going to be the only one who gets in trouble. And so they all did
they
it.
They all went. Oh, man.
So
that's funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
I love that. Yeah, I never knew that. That's so fun.
Yep. And so then you get the idea of the flood being to take them out. So that is the Nephilim.
Fascinating. That is so cool. I really feel like I'm going to need to read like Enoch now.
Mm-hmm.
Just to, like, get more like context on that, because that is so fascinating. Huh?
Yeah.
Nice.
So really I'm interested in the blood oath thing.
Yeah.
It's like, we have to have a human wife, but we can't,
yes.
can't let our boy go down by himself.
Absolutely. They were like, no.
That's loyalty.
Yes.
Really, but that's what I want to see.
Yes.
In the angels.
Absolutely. Loyalty.
So then we have another form of angel.
Okay.
The cherubim. The cherubs.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say these words.
Cherubim.
Cherubium. No. Cherub in the singular.
Yes.
And these are angels that directly attend to God.
Okay. I didn't know that. I didn't know that was sort of their like classification. I just thought it was like a word for angels. That's cool.
Yeah. So there's apparently, and I didn't look into this too much, but there's like a hierarchy of angels.
Cool.
And there's like 9 layers to the angels.
Fascinating.
And they're supposedly second to the seraphim.
Huh. Okay. Yes. I feel like I've like loosely heard some of those terms before. And again, if I'm remembering correctly, some of Supernatural also kind of like talks about those like breakdowns, but it's been a minute since I've watched those seasons. So I was kind of like around season like 6, I want to say, which I really feel like was part of the best part of that show. That show kind of went downhill.
This stuff is so
again.
Interesting.
So yeah, I do. I feel like Supernatural is worth watching just for like those seasons when they kind of talk about the angel stuff. It's been a minute. So like, that's cool. I didn't know there were 9. I've heard of like the
I couldn't tell you what they are.
Seraphim and cherubim.
Mm-hmm. It's in a Christmas
song.
That's
probably about it. Really?
I think so.
Oh. Well, yeah, I guess in the Christmas story, it talks about like that big, the angels in the sky. Wait, what?
It's in that song. Seraphim and cherubim. I don't know what the song is, but there it's in there somewhere.
One. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I don't know. So they're super scary. Okay.
Oh,
I just want to disclaim. They are
not the cute
fat
little chubby
babies.
Baby. Yeah.
That is not what they are.
Okay.
These are the descriptions. Mm-hmm. So you have a being that has 2 sets of wings and 4 faces.
Yikes.
One
face. One head, do we think? No, probably separate heads. I'd hope.
You know, who knows? It could. Honestly, I don't
Maddie,
know.
I'm asking you because you made angels.
That's the logistics of this horror matter.
Okay.
One is a lion to represent the wild animals.
Yes.
One is an ox to represent domestic animals.
Okay.
One is a human to represent humanity.
Okay.
And one is an eagle to represent the birds. So screw you, water animals. You get no face.
Nothing. No
in
face.
In the cherub.
just a fifth fish face. Just like a small fish just face coming out of his neck.
Guys. Oh, man. They have straight legs with hooves of a bull that shine like polished brass.
Okay.
These
sounds
things
very Revelation-y.
Are scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But now I understand why we paint them as small fat babies.
Yeah.
Because that's way better than a four-faced, double-winged thing.
I follow a bunch of like Christian meme accounts on Instagram. And there's a really funny one. I want to say it was Deuteronomemes is a really funny account. And they had one where it was like a SpongeBob side by side. And one of them is like the... I don't know, like paintings of angels. And it was like a little cute one with like SpongeBob and like little angel wings. And then the other one was like how angels actually look like. And it's just like, I don't know. It was a still where SpongeBob's like eyes are all over. It's like 700 like eyes and like up in the sky. Anyways.
You have to find that. We'll share
it. Yeah,
we'll
I'll try it. To find it. Because it was very funny because it is so accurate that like the description versus like how we actively like choose to view angels.
It's frightening. So we first meet them from what I could find in Genesis 3:24, because God placed the cherubim with the sword, the flaming sword, to guard the Garden of Eden. So they are the angels that are tasked with guarding Eden, but then they play a really, really big role in the book of Ezekiel.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically in Ezekiel 10. And so I piece together
totally
their description.
Yeah.
And this is how Ezekiel talks about them, summarizing this from chapter 10. So they had heads that appeared like sapphire in the form resembling a throne. So in this story, they are actually carrying the throne of God and the house of God, but they like are also the throne, I think.
Yeah.
So they're like embodying all these things. So they're tasked to take fire from within the wheel work. So they're wheels. They're like these spinning wheels covered in eyes.
Okay. That's what the SpongeBob picture was. It was like covered in it. Okay. Yes. Sorry.
Spinning wheels covered in eyes, right? Horrifying, with fire within it. And you have to go stand beside the wheel and take the fire out. The cherub stretched out its hand. I don't know where the hand came from, but stretched out its hand from among them and took the fire and put it into the hands of the men. They had the form of a hand under their wings. There were four wheels and they like all looked alike, something like a wheel within a wheel.
Oh, she's gonna freak out.
Okay. So they had like four wheels within wheels. They moved any of the four directions without veering, just going whatever direction the wheel faced. They apparently had rims and spokes and wings covered in eyes.
Fun.
And they were called the wheel work. Each of these wheels had four faces.
No.
The lion, the human, the ox, and the eagle. They're just so horrible sounding.
Because, like, I feel like eyes are terrifying.
They're the like concept of
just
eyes is gross.
Disembodied eyes is horrifying to me.
And so we see them also in 2 Samuel 22:11 and Psalm 18:10.
Okay.
But they're just all over Ezekiel. But in chapter one, they look like men with four faces. And they have four wings and two stretch up and two stretch around. And then there's human hands under the wings with the brassy feet and straight legs.
Okay.
Then you get these scary wheel things.
Okay.
Now in the ranking, Thomas Aquinas again deemed them characterized by knowledge, which made them second to the seraphim, who are represented by their burning love for God.
Okay.
So yeah, that's the cherubs, the cherubim. Terrifying.
Yeah.
Just so scary.
Really horrifying.
No wonder they're always like, do not be afraid. That's horrifying. Right?
Like, imagine, because, okay, gosh, I'm probably need to brush up. But like, when the angels come to the shepherd in the Christmas story, isn't the sky like full of angels? Like, it's not just one. It's full of them, right?
Yeah. Can you imagine if that's what it's full of?
Yeah. I wonder, because I don't know if it like characterizes which type of angel came to them. But anyways, horrifying.
So awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are like the like funny, scary.
Do not be afraid.
Do not be afraid.
Thousands of eyes like spinning around.
Just so horrifying. I would, no wonder. I mean, I wouldn't complain or argue with you at all. Yeah. You have like a thousand eyes. What am I going to say other than please,
it's like
yes,
in
please
Lord
go
of the
away.
Rings, the like big eye. Mm-hmm. Just, oh gosh.
I hate it.
Yeah.
So this is the last one before the fun bonus one. That I just think is interesting. I didn't find a lot on it, but I think it's very Harry Potter of the Bible. And it is a potential werewolf spotting.
Ooh. Mm. Also, real quick, say it again.
Werewolf.
Do you say wolf?
Werewolf. I do say wolf. Werewolf. It just takes too much effort to add the L on.
Good. I had a friend in like middle school who would say like wolf, and we would always be like, it's wolf. So I just like, I heard it and I was like, wait.
You know what? This one goes out to all the people who don't feel the need to enunciate the L all the time.
Hey, Maddie, there's space for you here.
Me and the Emilys.
Mm-hmm. Poor Emilys.
Oh, someday I'll learn how to speak. No, anyway.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Continue. You're doing great.
So in Daniel 4, we see King Nebuchadnezzar, who has these dreams, and Daniel's called in to interpret these dreams. And in them, God is kind of alluding to some things that are going to happen and warns him to, you know, be doing certain things. And he instead becomes very prideful. And so all of these things happen. He kind of carries the kingdom through and then tries to assume credit for himself. Uh-huh. And so in 4:28-33, it says, all this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. And at the end of the 12 months, he was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon. And the king said, is this not magnificent Babylon, which I have built as a royal capital by my mighty power for my glorious majesty? While the words were still in the king's mouth, a voice came from heaven. O King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is declared, the kingdom has departed from you. You shall be driven away from human society, and your dwelling shall be with the animals of the field. You'll be made to eat grass like ox, and seven times shall pass over you until you have learned that the Most High has sovereignty over the kingdom of mortals and gives it to whom he will. Immediately the sentence was fulfilled against Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven away from human society, ate grass like oxen, and his body was bathed with the dew of heaven until his hair grew long as an eagle's feathers and nails became like birds' claws. So as a punishment for his pride, God curses him to behave like a beast of the field. And this lasts until he recovers enough to then turn around and give glory to God.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think it sounds like lycanthropy. Mm-hmm. The supernatural transformation of a person into a werewolf.
That is so cool. I've never like noticed that in that story. Like, I remember being like, oh, that's gross that like his nails grew out that long. But I kind of like that reading of like, maybe he's a werewolf.
Yeah.
Maybe he turned into a werewolf. God could do it.
Yeah. You my lord.
Yeah, come on.
It's very like Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah.
Like, heed my warning, or you shall turn into a wolf.
Yes. I love it. Uh-huh. That is so funny.
Yeah.
Wow. I like thinking about King Nebuchadnezzar as a werewolf.
I think that it makes the story cooler.
Do we think he then, okay, when he got back to the place where he could glorify God, do we think he turned back into full human, or did he still have to like hide the fact that like, I want that TV show. That's what I want.
I want him to go back full human, but to always have the looming fear of his pride turning
just,
him
like,
into
looks
a wolf
up
again.
At the full moon. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just, ow.
A single tear.
God's reminder, the curse of becoming a werewolf. So those are the spooky ones. Uh-huh. there's not, I don't have a lot on this, but the fun one is that Austin is correct. In the King James Bible, unicorns are mentioned 9 times.
Ooh.
Apparently they're actually supposed to be rhinos, but yeah. I prefer unicorns.
He always follows it with that. He's like, there's unicorns in the Bible. And then people will be like, oh, what? And he's like, yeah, they're actually rhinos, but it's more fun to say unicorns.
I prefer unicorn.
Yeah. So does it actually say unicorn in the translations?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
So they translate King the James word. Was having fun with it.
Yeah. Okay. They translate the word into unicorn. Mm. And apparently it comes up in Deuteronomy, Numbers, Psalms, and Isaiah, and Job. But there's like a story that I don't remember where it is that is supposed to talk about how like the unicorns were so rowdy that when they went on the ark, Noah had to create a section all for them just so that they could get their nostril out of the boat to breathe so that they had to keep their horn trapped because they would just swing it around and hit things with it. And I'm like, who thought of that? You know,
that's so fun. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, spooky monsters.
Yeah. I loved this. This was so fun to just like, I don't know, take some time to talk about monsters and talk about something a little more lighthearted after doing some like mental health and emotional health and then on pro-life, pro-choice. So yeah, this is so fun. Maddie, thank you so much for doing all this research.
No, this was so great. Yeah. Truly, I think like reading recreationally and reading scholarly, like it just takes two different sets of brain energy.
Oh, really,
and I was really missing my fun reading.
Yeah.
And so this was like a fun kind of substitute for it. Mm-hmm. And I think too, in thinking about some of these stories, some of them are hard to read just generally.
Yeah.
And I don't know, there's something about adding in that more like mythical component to it that makes it easier to consume.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's fun things in there and it just in some ways also connects us to like communities and understandings and myths.
Yeah,
of past
absolutely.
And,
I mean, mythology is so important. Like every culture and tradition and people have had like mythology and stuff. And I think it might've been you who like, we were talking about this, but just the idea of like in the US, we don't have a lot of that mythical or like land knowledge because we wiped out and like removed all of the people who actually were from this land, like all Native Americans. We stole their land and don't know any of the like traditions or sort of like mythology of the land, which is a whole other like interesting topic.
Yeah, no, definitely. So I took a class in undergrad that I'm still obsessed with. And really this professor I'm just obsessed with, but it was on folklore and a lot of what we focused on, it was like a film reading anthropology, sociology hybrid course, but we talked a lot about how as humans, we are story-based creatures.
Yeah.
And so the tales that we tell ourselves and others influence the ways in which we move and navigate in the world.
Yeah.
And so if you look at even like a lot of the examples that they use more modernly are like modern horror stories.
Yeah.
A great example of that being Jordan Peele's Candyman that's coming out soon.
Yeah.
Like Candyman is intended to reflect something that is deeper than just the story of what's happening. And a lot of these stories do that too. And you get that in a lot of mythology. And in the US specifically, because we came in and colonized and took out entire indigenous communities and all of these things, we lost the stories that went along with the land. So we lack this sense of connection.
Yeah.
And there's something missing in our ability to connect to one another because we're missing a sense of story in the way that we move. So even when we're reading scripture or we're reading some of these things, if we can find a way to reconnect ourselves to the truth of the story, we can learn something from it, even if it's not factual.
Yeah, exactly. Like what does it tell us that there are like, I don't know, these crazy monsters in the Bible? Like what can we learn from that or take from that?
Just or this idea of a creature bigger than us
that
we can't take down. Like how do we live in relationship to something bigger than ourselves?
Yeah.
That we're created to exist alongside versus over.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're too prideful, God will turn you into a werewolf.
Yes. So
that's fact.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Just fact.
Yeah. So you better follow the straight and narrow.
Yeah. And not maybe just that his pride ate him alive and mentally just kind of messed with him. No, he actually
turned into a werewolf.
He got really hairy. It's just not like he avoided a haircut and didn't trim his nails.
No,
he became a werewolf.
Yes.
So.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad we got this recorded. We had so many challenges with our audio equipment. So y'all don't even understand.
You know, just learning to do this as we go. But I'm glad that we're here.
This
episode was fun.
Yes.
If you know of any other creatures or things or mythology, please relay them.
God, yes. I love it. I love mythology and all this stuff. I think it's so fun and so interesting.
Yeah. Or any good books. And then if you like this episode, definitely follow along with us, follow us, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Share it with a friend.
Yes.
Share this show with a friend who you think could use some community, or just talk about faith topics.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All of the things. We would love to continue expanding this group of people. We're having so much fun getting to know everyone on this journey, and we wanted to get the word out. So if you like what you're hearing, share it with people and
Absolutely.
Let us know.
Woo.
Awesome.
Bye, friends.
See ya.
Stay spooky.